who about the people? Okay, so there's this guy, and literally, like, the way that he looks at girls, I've never seen it before in my life. Like, it's actually crazy. Like, he literally, like, undresses you with his eyes. And
Ew.
I'm like, there's no way that that's natural. Like, he definitely, like, watched a YouTube video about that and, like, learned
Are
it.
you like reading off of a note?
No.
Yes. You
I just
literally
have it
reading
in
off
my
of a note.
brain. I have it in my brain because it was so crazy to me. And I just can remember every, like, I close my eyes at night and I see him looking at me.
There's something about the repeat this in bold, which is just fully making me not want to do it. Josh, if
Why
I should come on this podcast.
don't we talk about this right now?
Yeah,
So
Alex Senti is a liar. And he doesn't like girls, and he's probably racist and misogynistic and homophobic.
hi, I'm Alex Senti. I can't get to the phone
Basically,
right now. That's my imitation of Alex Senti.
Brittany and our friend Maria went to a
Because
party
that's his voicemail.
and said something to Alex about how he doesn't introduce himself in
I
the
said it was
podcast.
only me,
It
by the
was
way, who
only
said
Brittany who
this.
said that, how he doesn't introduce himself in the podcast, like in his podcast, and he should start doing. And then on a fucking episode with
It was with Ivy.
Ivy, out of all people,
All people.
Ivy.
Out of all fucking
Alex
people.
goes, "I was at a party this weekend and these podcast girls were scolding me." And then Ivy was like, "The podcast girls and podcast boys have beef." And I was like, "No, I'm not part of it." And it really frustrated me. I don't like being misunderstood by society.
If he thinks that Marielle hosts a podcast.
Yeah.
I
He does. That's the issue.
Alex, I'm sick right now. If you're listening to this, I wish you would come over and like give me tea.
Anyway, that was weird.
Okay. Alex Senti also said to me at that party that
Stop calling him by his full name.
he also said to me at that party that he saw my tweet about Thomas Pynchon that was about Gravity's Rainbow. That was like pictures of like me writing in my Gravity's Rainbow book, and like it was like a like indirect to my ex that I like did a while ago, and I posted it on Twitter for like 5 minutes, and he brought it up, and I was like, that tweet was up for 5 minutes, and then he looked really guilty. Well, were you in
Hey,
a
good.
classroom?
I'm in my office.
Are you in a
Whoa, you classroom?
have
a whiteboard.
Get it because of Muscle Man, because he's a teacher and I'm in a classroom.
No.
Okay.
Thanks for explaining it.
Yeah, no problem.
Good one. Good
Yeah,
one.
thank you.
Yeah, no
We were
problem.
having a crazy chat before you got on
About what?
about the way that guys look at girls.
Yeah, that like we think that some of them have learned how to do it off YouTube.com.
And what have they learned from YouTube?
Well, we ran into our friend yesterday on the street, and the way that he was looking was crazy. And I was like, that's not natural, the way that he looks.
The way he looks, or was looking at you,
Was
like
looking
looking
at
at, well,
us.
looking at me
Yeah.
specifically.
At you, and how can you imitate
Yeah, imitate
I
it?
can't because I didn't watch the YouTube tutorial on
Well, how
it.
do you know it's from YouTube?
It's definitely from
It's
YouTube.
from YouTube.
And they
Like,
were
you
doing
try. I bet you won't be able to do it.
are you talking to me?
Yeah.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you try.
Look, I'm sure if I knew what you were talking about, I could do it perfectly.
I don't think you could. I think it's like Bushwick apartment thing.
So how's your
There.
day going?
It's going fine. I'm curious. You think there are YouTube tutorials about how to look at women?
There's YouTube tutorials for everything. Well, our like one friend from like a while ago, he like tried one time back in freshman year or sophomore year of college. He was like showing my ex-boyfriend, who was his roommate and friend, like videos just about masculinity. And it was like why you shouldn't like jerk off and stuff,
Like
and
why
like
you
just
should take a
like,
cold shower, like that sort of YouTube video.
yeah. And he was like trying to like indoctrinate into the other guy. So there's YouTube tutorials and everything.
That's true, although I haven't encountered any about like look. It's like a facial expression.
It's like a puppy, but it's like I can't do it. Like I can't. Like I really can't. I can't. But it's like
Like the Rizzler or something, like with the eye, with the eyebrows kind of like.
no.
No.
We'll have him on the pot. He hasn't had a girlfriend in 4 years, so we said he
When
can
he gets a
come on when he
girlfriend,
gets a
we're
girlfriend,
gonna
and
have
then we'll
that.
have him do it, and then we'll send you a screenshot.
All right, sounds good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Cool.
But yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Do you think you're
Congrats.
ever gonna oh, sorry, what were you
I
gonna
was
say?
gonna say congrats on Muscle Man coming
Oh,
out.
I was gonna say, do you think you're ever gonna write a book that spans over a period longer than a
Yeah,
day?
I'm making some progress, okay? I'm making some progress.
Yeah.
You know, this is like a few more hours. I'm working on
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
it.
Yeah. I'm gonna actually ask about that. I was gonna ask about that later, but maybe I'll just ask about it now. I was gonna ask about like that concept of like writing like a not piece of fiction or novel like over the span of a day or an afternoon or whatever. And I'm curious like what attracted you to using that constraint and like if you kind of like think of time itself as this like kind of medium that you're working with.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm always kind of making stuff up when I answer questions like this because I didn't like I thought of all this stuff beforehand and then like set out to like
Yeah.
do some investigation about time and like and all this kind of
Yeah.
stuff. You know, but one of the things that I have thought about since is that you know, I'm always trying to think about what literature can do uniquely well. And you know, for a while that was like, okay, literature is just words on the page. So the thing that literature is uniquely is just the actual words on the page. So like, you know, you make the words look a certain way and sound a certain way and interact a certain way. And so it's really just the language. But then I was like, started to think, but there are novels that I like for example, that are in translation or, you know, Dostoevsky, whose sentences, at least in translation, aren't particularly beautiful or rhythmic or compelling or whatever. And so I was like, well, there has to be something else. And the thing that I sort of started to think about was that, you know, like maybe, you know, paintings can do image uniquely well, movies can do action uniquely well, like music can do emotion uniquely well. And the thing that literature can do is to portray a particular texture of consciousness uniquely well. You can't really do that in other media. Like you can kind of do it in other mediums, but like literature is particularly good at that. And it's just what I'm interested in. You know what I mean? Like I'm super interested in that kind of like cerebral, psychological fiction. And I don't know. And so it's easy to kind of do that in the span of a day, you know, as opposed to like, I don't even know how you would stretch that out. And also like there's another simple thing, which is just that when I write prose, I mean, I'm trying to write a thriller right now, just a kind of classic thriller. But it's like weird, like when I write sentences that are like that have less pressure, like less kind of like psychological like pressure, like it feels lazy. Like, you know, I don't know, he put the book away or something like that, or you know, I don't know. There's like I don't know how to, or like dialogue and stuff. Like I don't know. So that's one answer. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I also think it's interesting that you said people thinking that you like plan ahead in this way for doing that, and like when you go to answer like a question like that, it like you're like, okay, like how do I actually talk about this? Like I feel like I'm just making stuff up, because I kind of like have been thinking about that, and like sorry, this is kind of like off topic from your actual answer, but I've been thinking about that concept a lot like recently, just like of people talking, because I feel like I've like very recently gotten very pessimistic about talking and about like what feels like should still be said and like what the point to like even talking to someone sometimes is. And I'm curious if like that comes up for you and if like you feel that way about writing specifically, because I feel like talking and writing, like it's both words. Like I was gonna ask you this like later on, but like do you feel like you have that issue at all with writing, especially after doing it for so long?
Like, what's the point? I mean, it's another one of those, it's another thing that's hard. I can relate for sure with what you're talking about when it comes to like talking. You know what I mean? Often, you know, it's hard not to feel like one is just filling space or making stuff up. And that's kind of what you're doing. Like, I mean, if you really think about talking, it's kind of gets psychedelic, at least for me, you know, where it's like I'm like reading my own thoughts and like trying to translate them into like where like it gets really kind of weird, you know. But with writing, I just love to do it, you know. I mean, I feel like I've always, since I was really young, have liked to do it. And I kind of never feel more alive than when I'm kind of like engaged in the process of like writing and editing. So I don't know. At this point, I don't question it. I don't know. I try and yeah, I just, you know.
Yeah, no, that's a really beautiful thing. Well, okay, so Can we go back a little bit? And I want to hear about like where writing came into your life, but also just like what life was like for you growing up and what like has shaped you and your writing, as well as like the version of you that's entered like the online like literary scene, like what led up to here.
I mean, I basically have always been online. Like since I was 16, I published my first poems when I was 16 online. And part of it was that I just like learned at the time, like online literature wasn't, it was people really viewed it with suspicion. You know, like it wasn't real literature and like, you know, it wasn't gonna last and all this kind of stuff. Like people were really suspicious of it. But for me, when I was in high school, like I grew up in Ohio in like a suburb of Cleveland. And you know, I knew like I had an eighth grade English teacher who would like give me books to read, and I had some interest in it. But it was really like when I got online and saw people with having like at the time it was Blogspot. And they had blogs and there were like online literary journals where you could just send them your writing and get published. And so I tried that and then got published, I think the first time I submitted, and that was like super exciting, you know what I mean? But so I always, and I remember thinking like, I'm just going to pretend to be older than I am and, you know, meet these other writers and whatever. And so I kind of like, yeah, I started like a blog and Twitter very early. And then like probably I think by the time I was 17, like I went to New York and met Tao and met, you know, who you guys had on and met other writers doing kind of what I thought was exciting things. And But I was, but yeah, I mean, I mean, I can never remember if I've talked about this on podcasts and stuff, but the first thing that I really wanted to be was a rapper. And I was like,
Oh, that's
first, I was
fun.
initially highly influenced by Eminem in the movie 8 Mile. Like that was like
Classic.
exactly who I wanted to be. Yeah. I brought a picture of Eminem to the barber and I was like, make me look like this.
Oh my
Like
God.
in third grade, I was like, anyway, but so, yeah. But
That's
then,
really funny.
yeah.
Did you like follow that stuff online also, or was it more of just like a like being a kid like and obsessing over that kind of stuff?
No, I mean, I followed that a lot. I mean, I became a part of it really young. Like, I wrote two poetry books when I was in high school, and they came out. One came out when I was 18, and one came out when I was 19. And they're kind of embarrassing now, but like, you know, but I was also like, I was self-publishing, you know, chat books and selling them online. And like, we were going on tours and stuff. And like, because I had before that, I'd played in like DIY punk bands. And so I was used to kind of like just doing everything myself and like, you know, setting up tours and like playing in houses and all this kind of stuff. And so just, I feel like just applying that to literature was fun and freeing, especially because I like hated school and I didn't have access to like normal kinds of like publishing routes and was also just kind of dumb and belligerent. So,
That's really in I feel like whenever anyone has gotten into something when they were like in high school that they then like continue to do, like especially like something with like writing and like getting involved in that scene and like even moving to New York that young, like that's like very fascinating to me because I'm like that must have warped your brain in like this interesting way.
well, I didn't move to New York. I would just go visit. I would just go visit,
Okay.
you know, and I would go party and like
Yeah.
that
But
probably
at
worked my brain a little bit
yeah.
too.
Well, even just being a part of that scene that young is interesting because I feel like it's something that like for like our experience, like we just moved to New York, but also like even just like going to college, I feel like was our first like taste of like getting any sort of like scene like that in person.
Where are you guys from?
We're both from Philly.
Philly. Oh, nice. But like still kind of has stuff going, right?
Yeah, it does. And
Yeah.
like I feel like that was like my first taste of like scene culture besides like what I knew from the internet and like being on a fan account of stuff.
What fan?
I was an Ariana Grande, Fifth Harmony, YouTube stan. Samira was
Was
One
like One
Direction,
Direction,
Taylor
also
Swift.
YouTube, 5 Seconds of Summer, All Time Low, like Warped Tour bands.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Fifth Harmony just reunited. I don't know if you saw, but it's really awesome.
Well, and I didn't see that, but I did. I talked to the guy. I was visiting my parents in Cleveland recently, and I happened to run into this guy who I knew like, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. And he was like, I was like, yeah, I'm living just outside of DC now. And he was like, oh yeah, I go down there every summer with my wife. We go to Warped Tour.
Oh my god.
Like, what the hell, dude?
Oh my
That's
god.
so funny.
But it was like this sort of classic, like you know, tattooed millennial kind of like thing where he's just like going to Warped Tour. I'm like, dude, you're like 32.
Well, I feel like all of that has like slowly like seeped into like the general public, and now like people who you wouldn't expect to like be going to stuff like that like do go to stuff like that.
Yeah, it's possible. I didn't even know Warped Tour was still a thing.
Yeah, I thought that it ended because I feel like it did. Maybe they resurrected it
It's
because
possible that
I
that's what
think it
happened.
got
Yeah.
resurrected. Yeah.
I did, yeah, kind of like building off of that and like entering like the online writing community and stuff. I wanted to ask, because you read your article in about like just your relationship with like reading and writing and literature, coinciding with like your addiction to like heroin and alcohol. And I wanted to like just ask about that a little bit and just kind of like what that mental process that went on for you when you were like able to fully immerse yourself back into writing after that period of your life, and just kind of like what was going through your head and how you viewed like writing and reading. Because I also know you talked about religion in that article and like how that had helped you. So I'm just like, yeah, like curious if you can elaborate on that.
It's a good question. I mean, yeah, I appreciate the question. I mean, I think that when I was younger, I mean, there's this thing. I just did a conference here actually, where I was on a panel and someone asked, like, you know, they asked something about, you know, writers being, you know, messed up and like sick and like crazy and you know whatever. And I think that there's this total myth, this like romantic with a capital R myth, that like the writer, that writers in history or most writers or something, you know, are like drunk and on drugs and like write well as a result or something. And I don't know like where it come from. It's actually hard for me to think of examples. You know, you can maybe think of a couple examples where that's true, but generally speaking, it's just not true, you know. And I had this like, I mean, this sort of like this weird thought when I was younger that was basically just cope. But you know, it was kind of like, well, you know, doing drugs and being a piece of shit and like, you know, like being terrible to everyone in my life, this actually kind of fuels my creativity. And without it, like I wouldn't be able to be creative or something. It's definitely not been the case with me. I mean, my like career has like, in many ways, I feel like it really got started when I got off of that stuff. But it was a period, there was a period of time where, when I was in high school and like just doing drugs and drinking every day, everything I was doing was basically unconscious, you know, where it was like, it was kind of this soupy mix of like imitating the writers I liked, expressing myself, you know, was kind of what I was kind of interested in doing. And I thought that like just expressing myself, would somehow make me my life better, would make me feel better, that there was some sort of inherent value in just like expressing my feelings in poems or something. And in reality, like you know, it didn't help me feel better. It didn't help my life. The literary value of it was like questionable at best. But when I got off of the drugs and got a little bit older and became sort of conscious of what I was doing, it was a little bit paralyzing. You know, I think people experience that. They're like, well, you know, I just quit drinking and I can't write or whatever. And there was definitely a period of time where that was the case, because it was like kind of what I was talking about at the beginning, where I was like, what even is this? What am I even doing? If it's not to just kind of indulge in a narcissistic expression, like what actually am I doing? And so it was a little paralyzing at first, but then it was completely freeing. And because it allowed me to focus on things other than myself, you know, like, kind of adopting a sort of spiritual, or at least certainly a less self-centered orientation in the world, like allows you to think about things other than yourself. And so like I think that, and that's kind of like endlessly like nourishing or whatever creatively.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I feel like that like myth of oh you have to be fucked up and depressed and sad to be creative. Like I remember being on Tumblr when I was like, you know, a little kid, and that was like that was what was propagated on Tumblr too. And like every like because I was like involved in like online poetry Instagram account stuff, and like all the online poets were like so depressed, you know, and like that was the thing.
And they were for sure, or they were just writing like depressing stuff.
They were just like, well, they would just like rant about like being depressed and talk about it and like
Like
talk
some
about
people I feel like
drugs.
wrote like, well, and then there was kind of like the like fan fiction side of it of like writing about like cutting, writing about depression, like
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. Okay, I'll say, I think it's definitely true that people with like mental illness that cutters and so on. love to get online and like write bad poetry. That's definitely true. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But in terms of like writers who have like endured or have literary, I mean, there are some that have been messed up, but for the most part, it's just not true. They come in all sort of all different temperaments, all different kind of it's just not true, generally speaking. But one thing I've noticed recently was, and I haven't figured out a way to like bring this into the cultural lexicon, but anytime like a quote from a novel like appears, more than half the time it seems like it was written by a cutter. Like no matter
because it being isolated, you mean? Like
where it's like I can't really think of an example off the top of my head, but I was that's like really this funny. They always has cutter vibes, but I haven't figured out a way. Maybe one off the top of my head, but my maybe not. You'll see it everywhere.
Do you get what you mean though, because like when you like just see like random writing like taken out of context on Twitter, it feels that way.
Yeah
I was also gonna say, just about like the relationship between like drugs and writing, like something I've thought about a lot, like, and I find interesting about it, like my friend who's sober was talking to me once and explaining, because like it was like the first time we met, we were just talking about like reading, and he was basically just saying like he has to read because he's sober. And I thought that was like an interesting way of like categorizing like reading and writing, like in its importance. And like I feel like I've bookmarked that in my head a little bit and like gone over and over it, in terms of just like, I don't know, like what that means about like how reading affects us in writing, and like in terms of focus and grounding. And it feels like there's like something deeper there, and I'm curious if that's like something you relate to or if you have any thoughts about it.
Yeah, it's fun. This is like the second time in the last week someone's asked me about that essay, and I don't remember any of it. Like I can't remember what I wrote in the essay, but I was, there's a couple of thoughts that I have. I mean, one is that one of the things my friend Michael Kloon talks about is that he has this, he wrote this great memoir about heroin addiction, and then he studied with neuroscientists and all these other kinds of people, and had this thought that like actually what happens when the addict sees like the bag of heroin or the alcoholic sees the bottle of beer, it's not that they're necessarily chasing the feeling of the first time, but it's something that happens in their actual sight when they see it. It appears new for the first time. Mm. And or it appears new, even as it's, you know, it can be the 100th time you've seen it. Mm. And it has this effect on your perception. And he talks about how, you know, like if you get a new car, you sort of see all the details at first. But like after like 3 weeks of having the car, you don't even see it. You know, it just kind of disappears into habit. And but the addictive object doesn't, you know, it always looks fresh, it always looks new, it always looks enticing and gives you a certain kind of feeling, and then you do it, and often doing it maybe it relieves some sickness or something, but it's not like eventually it stops working, so like you don't even start you don't even feel that great or whatever. And art has often, especially since the Romantic period, has like aspired to that quality where it's like, I want to make something that is new every time I see it.
So that
I think is really interesting and compelling. But another sort of thing about reading that I think is interesting is that you know, when you read in a weird way, the words like almost like you can't, like I think I read about this a little in Muscle Man, but it's like you can't really read and think at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like it's actually impossible. You can read and then you can think, you can think and then you can read, but you can't actually like be reading and thinking at the exact same time. And so there's a way in which you actually get to kind of like leave your own consciousness, which is always full of like deliberative concerns. Like when I'm thinking about my life or I'm like looking around the room, everything is being filtered through like the possibility of like action. It's filtered through my identity. There are all sorts of these like concerns that my perception is filtered through. But when I'm reading, it's like someone else's perception that's like occupying my head. So I get to kind of like leave my own kind of like cramped head for a while and like occupy a different space. And so I think that's, and with drugs, you know, of course, like it can have effects on your perception and consciousness and so on, but I, you know, maybe that's one thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like I like relate to that fully, because I also think anytime I'm like spiraling and I like get myself to just sit down and read, it like helps me get out of like the spiral that I'm in, and like I can just like take a break from thinking about it, which like I don't think anything else has that effect on me.
Yeah, I mean, it's prayer kind of does for me, but it's a similar kind of motion. Like it's a similar, it's a similar kind of thing. Yeah, it's true though. Reading can,
I also wanted to talk about your like time working for the New York Tyrant as the editor, and like how, because you said online that Gian replied to a tweet of yours saying that you wanted to try editing somewhere, and that was how you started there.
So
I'm just like curious, like if you want to talk about like what your time there was like and how you feel like it changed your idea of the writing industry and also like your own standards for writing.
Yeah, for sure. It was, yeah. I mean, I met Gian, I think during Hurricane Sandy. I was like 18 years old. I got stuck in New York during Hurricane Sandy. And he would always say he could remember, and I went over this, like, you know, at the time, I don't know, he must've been like 20 years older than me or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like at his house, and he said he can always remember like the smile on my face when he was like holding out a plate of, I don't know, cocaine or heroin, you know, something. Like, I looked up and I smiled at him, and he would always tell me that he could, like, that image of me smiling was like burnt into his mind forever. So we met then, and then we didn't talk for a long time until I tweeted like many years later that I wanted to try editing somewhere, and then he just hit me up and was like, "Yeah, I'm starting an online version. Do you want to try it?" Mm-hmm. And then I tried it, and it went well. And then I did it for like I think 5 years, like four or 5 years, something like that. And I mean, one thing that was great about it was, he just let me do my thing, and I had no, like, you know, I had no real experience doing that, and I had no like official qualifications. And so we were publishing like really, really short fiction. And I was working at the time at this art store in Cleveland that like almost no one, we sold art, like local art and like mid-century modern furniture. And like almost no one would ever come, like maybe three or four people would come in during an 8 hour shift. And so I'd spend the 8 hours just like tinkering with these stories that were like 1,000 words and like rearranging the sentences and like messing with different words and seeing what would happen if I do this. And I really learned how to edit that way. And the first time, the only time I emailed him asking for advice, he was just like, you already know what to do. You know, and so it was like this thing of it was a good experience. And then it also helped me see myself as someone who was, you know, I would hit up writers who I liked, like Lydia Davis, for writing, and they would just say like yes and send me stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And that was crazy because I was like, wow, maybe I can actually like be a writer. And then often they would send bad stuff. Writers that I liked would send bad drafts. And that was also really encouraging because it was like, oh, this writer who I sort of think of as in a certain way can write terrible drafts and then just send them to like, you know, to me, you know, for, you know?
Yeah.
And that was like really freeing because I was like, oh, my first drafts don't have to be good. Not everything has to be, you know, I can just, it was incredibly freeing.
And you were working, you started when you were 18?
No, I met him when I was 18. I think I started, it was like 2016 when I started. I must have been like 22 or something like that.
What kind of importance do you feel like New York Tyrant holds now, and also just like along with the rest of Gian's legacy? And also, like, I know you're on the board of directors for the Giancarlo I don't know how to say his last name. What is it? DiTrapano. Foundation.
DiTrapano, yeah.
DiTrapano. Okay, I'm gonna do it like
I mean, that's how I say it.
I'm gonna do it like I said it the first time.
Yeah.
Wait, say it again.
Now I'm DiTrapano, I think.
DiTrapano. Okay. So you're on the board of directors for the Gian DiTrapano Foundation Literature. I can't help but change my voice when I say it. But yeah, I'm curious, like,
name.
Both like names, like the first and last are both like so long. They feel like two names, so it's like four names. Anyways,
yeah.
So what is like your, like, so you're on the board of directors. I'm curious what that actually means and like how you've contributed to the foundation and like how it's evolved since. I know those are kind of two different questions, but.
Yeah. What it mean? I mean, it's changed a bit. I mean, basically, like, I help decide who goes on the residencies. Mm-hmm. And this past time, it was kind of fun. All of the submissions were completely anonymous. When they first brought me on, I don't know, maybe a year or two after, it was a little while after Gian's death. They had a few rounds of residencies, but then they brought me on, and I just came with a list of writers who I thought should go, and they went, and submissions weren't open at the time. So we got to send a bunch of great writers, who I just like knew from around. But yeah, I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, like we send writers to Italy for 2 weeks. Everything's completely paid for. Food's completely travel, food, everything to this like beautiful villa in Italy, to just work on writing. And it's like, it's cool. And like, one of the things that I try and think about is like, you know, we sent a bunch of people, or a handful of people, that have basically never been published before. Like, you know, maybe they've had a few publications or whatever. And we try and pair them with maybe some like mid-career writers or other kinds of things, just to sort of like, make it a bit more dynamic or something like that. But anyway, you know, we've sent a bunch of great writers. And I think in terms of his legacy, I really don't know. It's hard for me to think about in an abstract way. He was my friend. And so sometimes people ask me questions like that, and I'm just like, I just don't know. You know,
yeah,
no, that makes
it's
sense.
Kind of just not for me to even like, it's just not for me to even like speculate. Like, I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's like an interesting like lore around like even the foundation, like, because everyone, like, all, like, I was looking through the residents on the website, and I was like, oh my god, everyone here's a star. You know, and like, I feel like
it's
there's
true.
Just like,
look,
this
I'll take
level
full
of
credit.
respect.
I'll take full credit for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I feel like there is just like this level of like immense respect for the work he did and what he like created, and
yeah,
like it's very like evident.
Well, like, I mean, one of the things that is that was that one of the things that was so great about him was that, I mean, for example, him just responding to my tweet and then letting me edit his journal is like,
yeah,
people just don't do that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely try and do that for people. Like, I think he was able to identify talent outside of more traditional modes.
Mm-hmm.
And the publishing world is so like stagnant and like afraid and like boring, and like, it's just ridiculous. You know, it's a bunch of like, it's a terrible zone. And so I think his willingness to kind of like take chances on different kinds of writers and hype people up, you know, he sort of made you feel like you were like, you know, us, the guy or the girl or whatever. And
Yeah,
no, that's really sweet. Also, just like, what, from what it sounds like the faith that he had, and just like being like, oh, you already know what to do, like having that like faith and like people's talent and just like letting people kind of do their own thing.
Yeah, it's true. But I'm like, yeah, or he was just like being lazy and didn't want to
yeah.
do it, you know? Like, you know, yeah. It's always easy to like read certain things back into that. I mean, you know,
yeah.
The effect that it had was important and good, but
yeah,
you know,
like, yeah.
And regardless, yeah. It did have that effect. But yeah, that's really funny, because I feel like with editing, like, there's not a right way to do it, and I think about that often, just in terms of like, because I feel like I've been thinking a lot about like publishing recently, just because I've like been trying to like apply to like publishing jobs and stuff,
oh,
and I'm
cool.
And I'm like, what do I like actually need to be able to do while editing in order for like someone to want to hire me, you know what I mean? And that's like been a concept in my head recently.
Are you guys in school currently? You're out.
No, we graduated.
Yeah, well, I work a 9-to-5. Brittany,
yeah,
just
yeah,
got
sorry.
Laid off.
I got laid off recently, so I'm looking for a new
recently.
Job. If anyone wants to give me one, who's listening,
true.
Hi, I need a job.
Yeah. Or if any network wants to sign our
podcast
and give us a bunch of money, so
then
we can
you
quit
can
our
that
jobs.
Too.
Is that? We'll try and make this one good. How can
yeah.
we?
Yeah, thanks. We need it. We need all the
yeah,
help we can
yeah,
get.
We're banking
I'm not
on that,
sure.
actually.
I don't know. Is that the grind? You try and get picked up by some sort of like podcast network?
I don't really know.
Yeah, honestly, we've only been thinking
I
about
think,
this recently, because I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, well, now I need to find an income.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I hate my job. I love my job, but I don't want it. In case anyone from my job is listening.
I don't know. I was gonna say, what's the job, but you don't have to.
It's data engineering.
Oh, okay, nice.
It's like, yeah. But I wanted to shift to talking about Muscle Man. Already talked a little bit about like just like the time span of like it taking place over a day. What led you to want to investigate masculinity in the form of writing and like in this book, and because like, and what you feel like you were hoping to uncover, if there was anything that like hasn't already been said before. Kind of just like generally, I guess, to start, just like the writing process of the book. Because I know you had said that you like started it from just like notes that you had in your phone of like rants and stuff. And like about like academia and about like whatever, like random things. And I'm curious, like just kind of like how those themes formulated and like turned into the book, and like what made you want to explore those themes?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. Yeah, it's hard. In a way. So when I first started the book, thinking a lot about, I think I wrote the first draft from between 18 or 19 to 2021, something like that. And at the time, like, it was sort of the cultural climate was just so claustrophobic and crazy. And I think I felt, I was reading a lot of like philosophy and having these like big brain kind of like reactionary sort of like impulses or whatever. And when I started it, I thought that the book was basically going to be this like defense of like strength and like vitality and whatever, this like this takedown of the whatever. And it was like written in first person. And I would get all puffed up and write these rants and feel like some sort of big genius. And then I would read them and I would be like, this is so stupid. Like I would go back and read them and it would be like the ugliest, like malformed, like resentment laden, repetitive kind of crap. And so eventually over time, like the novel turned into what it is now, which is, I think, like a sort of proper novel that kind of like even ended up sort of satirizing a lot of the things that I ended up doing or starting to do. And so I don't, I don't really know. I worked on it for a lot for many years, just kind of editing and tinkering with it. But it's hard because on the one hand, there was a period where any masculine expression was viewed not just with suspicion, but as based fundamentally rooted in violence. That like if you were, I remember I was actually my wife used to like nanny full time for these kids, and me and the kid, and she was raising the kids, we'll say, in a very progressive way. And but then I would come around, just hang out with them, and the kid would automatically start like pretending to shoot me and like trying to play war and like all this kind of
That's
stuff.
so interesting.
And at one point he was like, we're gonna battle for, my wife's name is Nicolette, he's like, we're gonna battle for Nicolette. And so we're like fighting and whatever. And then I was like, actually what we should do is why don't we join forces and we can protect Nicolette, trying to sort of like
God.
redirect some of his, he was like 6 years old or something, redirect some of this sort of like masculine, toward something. And I remember the mom being like really upset that we did that. It was like, Nicolette can protect herself, da 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 da, and I guess for some reason that sticks out in my head as like as an example of like the way that people have tried to kind of like push masculinity, that basically like kind of like pervert the masculine kind of like mode, and kind of almost like stigmatize it, you know what I mean? And but the weird thing is that the sort of reaction to the kind of like feminized sort of like HR kind of like cultural situation from back then is this kind of like almost like you can see on Twitter, I'm sure you guys see these kinds of like parody style, like kind of what you talked about at the beginning, these kinds of like masculinity gurus. It's all very kind of like gay and stupid and like very kind of like, it's like, it's kind of like fake machismo. So I don't, anyway, I feel like I'm sort of rambling incoherently, but I so there's, yeah, I was just thinking about a lot of that different thing. I mean, a part of it is too, is just that, like, just to stay grounded in the book for a second, is that I think often the people who are like the character Harold is sort of attracted to a kind of like Nietzschean kind of like strong man sort of like I'm going to will myself into like a certain kind of greatness and everyone around me is stupid and peasants and NPCs and whatever. And I think normally the kind of person who is attracted to like that or like an Andrew Tate or like any of these kinds of like the kind of person who's attracted to that is normally like Nietzsche himself, this sort of sniveling kind of like impotent sort of like loser. And I just wanted to explore that kind of like psychological situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you mentioned somewhere else, like when talking about Muscle Man, that like the scenario of like you were interested in investigating, like sometimes people do things and they don't really know why. Mm-hmm. And like for you in Muscle Man, that's like Harold taking the backpack in the story. But it was interesting because reading that reminded me a lot of just like of the stranger, because of when like, oh, the sun's too hot, so I have to kill him. Like, and I was curious if you felt like there's like a correlation between like that act of just like doing something just like without a reason and like your idea of masculinity, because I don't know why, like the stranger and also Muscle Man, to me it's like, oh, like they're both like male narrators, so like it has to do with masculinity. But yeah,
it's been a long time since I've read The Stranger. I read it when I was in ninth grade, and maybe I've read it once since. And I remember my English teacher walking past me and seeing it on my desk and her saying something about the sun. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I had no idea what she was talking about, and I pretended to know. I don't, I'm sure there's a connection there. A lot of my favorite sort of writers are like the Christian existentialists. And so I'm sure there are like overlaps there.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember enough about The Stranger to.
Yeah.
I mean, the last thing I'll say about masculinity is that I have this talk. I'm doing a talk with the head of the PhD department in psychology at NYU. And so I have to actually get my thoughts together. It's about masculinity. I have to figure it out. I don't know. But one of the
things, that's exciting.
When is that?
It's in Albany, New York on, I can't remember, September, October at some point.
Okay.
But basically, I think, I mean, this is, I'm going to like Bible thump for a second. I basically sort of think that like the ideal of masculinity is basically Jesus. And I think like true masculinity would be something like self-sacrificial love for your friends and the people in your life, you know? So it's not this kind of like overbearing, self-centered kind of like take what's yours sort of attitude, but it would be something like self-giving love, you know?
Like kind of building off of not masculinity, but just like in line with like your own like thoughts and like ideas and philosophies, I'm curious because there was one like line in the book that I really loved and I wrote it down. It was, occasionally a person's thoughts harmonize with something outside of them to such a degree that the internal and external worlds feel mysteriously merged. The distance between them feels so small that they're lying flat on top of another. And I remember reading that line and just thinking that it was really pretty and also like very well written. And I'm curious, like, just kind of what your ideas regarding this sort of synchronicity is, and if you also interpret coincidence as a kind of mystical connection between thought and reality.
And that's a good, it's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, do you feel like you're like spiritual? Like,
I mean,
about religion a lot,
yeah,
but
yeah, I mean, for sure. Like there's, it's something that I almost like hesitate to even talk about because it's so like strange, you know, the idea. It almost sounds like I still feel weird almost talking about it because, you know, I mean, I believe in the reality of like of the soul and the reality of God, and like, and I think that like sort of people still don't know, like neuroscientists and philosophers have been trying to figure out this problem for so long. They still don't know about the relationship between consciousness and matter. Like it's still basically this fundamental mystery. And so the interaction between like, you know, the sort of thought or spirit world and the physical world, I think is really mysterious. And it's hard to even say anything about it. I think part of why I like exploring that stuff in novels is because you can kind of gesture toward it. You can like ground it in a specific scenario or like a scene or, you know, but there's all kinds of like weird stuff that goes on, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Do you feel like then you're just kind of gesturing towards like the general idea, just that there is just something underlying, but like there, you don't really see like a point to really defining it?
I mean, I'm in the book. I can't remember where that sentence is in the book or what it.
Him recounting like a childhood memory, and like David is like calling, is talking to him about like a prize. Like he feels as if like him thinking about that childhood memory caused David to like bring up talking about the prize.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I don't know. I mean, you know. Yeah. I don't even know what to say. I mean, I like the to your Brittany, your question about, I guess, like not even trying to explain. I mean, I like, you know, I'm an Orthodox Christian. I go to liturgy. I pray like Orthodox Christian prayers, and like and I like but I'm like still growing into it and learning. And the more sort of the more I get into kind of like the practice of it. The sort of less I'm inclined to like talk as if I know, you know what I mean? It's a complicated and a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know that you, and I know you said that you don't really remember the article you wrote about, like the heroin addiction and stuff like that. But, I do remember, like, 'cause I read it super recently, that you were saying that like, everyone was telling you to pray and you were just like, I'm getting nothing. Like, I'm getting nothing. And I'm curious where that started to shift for you. Like, when did you become religious and then really like feel it and believe it?
I mean, it's so one of the things was that, yeah, I had a friend who was like, just pray and ask for help in the morning and pray and say thank you at night. Mm-hmm. And the worst case scenario is that you're like talking to a wall. Mm-hmm. And I was doing it and I'm like, you know, well, I don't believe it. You know, but like, you know, I wasn't doing heroin, which was crazy. It was like a miracle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, and there have been times where it's like, you know, you pray and it's not like, oh, I pray for this thing to happen, then it happens. But it's like, the act of regular prayer, like has like undeniably changed me. And it's almost, it's like one of the reasons why I'm a little bit suspicious of the way that people talk about religious experience or spiritual experience now is because it's almost always filtered through some sort of discourse. There's some sort of, you know, it's online. And so it's like always staying at the head or the idea level where people are having like debates or they're like talking about X or Y or talking about the ideas. But I think ultimately the ultimate spiritual reality that we inhabit is like beneath the level of idea and even beneath the level of articulation. Like one of the things that, you know, in Christianity, there's this tradition of you know, icons, people painting beautiful icons and sort of venerating them, but then also iconoclasts, like destroying them because they're like, we mistake these icons for the kind of like fundamentally ineffable presence of God. You know, we mistake the symbols that we use for God himself, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there's this way in which like, yeah, my experience is that like head knowledge is just like one part of a kind of integrated life, and things like prayer, things like you know, going to liturgy when I don't want to. I feel like I grow more spiritually when I like do something that I don't particularly want to do but that is good for me. I grow more then than I do just like having like a deep thought, you know. Mm-hmm. What I mean, there's the will is operative at I think like a pre-conscious level, and I think like there are all sorts of murky kind of like motivations and all. There's just a lot going on in a person that's not just like their ideas, you know?
That just reminds me of like, I forget if it's just like a theory or if it's like a thing. I often find myself not knowing where I know things from. If it was from like my friend who's a psychic, because she tells me so much shit like this, but, or if it's just like something I read online. So I heard this somewhere, but just like, that reminded me of like, just the ideas that like certain like thoughts that come to us are like, kind of implanted there, and like sometimes your thought isn't coming from you, it's coming from like something outer that's like putting the thought into your head. And I think about that a lot, and I feel like that I don't know, like, because you were talking about it not just being like thought, but I think there's like an interesting like balance between those two things.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's very, again, like it gets like tripped out. I think in my first novel, I think in my first novel, there's like the narrator wonders something like, is consciousness something that my brain produces? Is it something that my brain inhabits? Which is like way different. You know what I mean? And again, like, yeah, it's a mystery. I don't know.
I did want to shift a little to talk about the novelist. Well, kind of, I guess, the two novels, like, relationship together. Because when you first published it, I know you said before online in an interview that you hadn't been intending to recognize the way it would be perceived as an autofiction novel, but you were more interested in evaluating your actual relationship with the genre. And I'm curious if this is something you felt aware of in its own way for this release, even though it's not out yet and it's not exactly autofiction, but it still carries like a similar tone. To me, like the two books are like in the same world. I feel like I read them that way, but.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of wasn't worried that people would think this was about me, in part because it's really not, and yeah, I don't know. I don't know. They are sort of in the same world. I mean, I started writing this one basically immediately after I finished the other one. But I wasn't really, I don't know, maybe I should be worried that people are going to think it's all. I don't, I mean, well, one of the things is like I did write an essay for Harper's about weightlifting, and that borrows a lot of the kind of passages from the weightlifting stuff in the novel. In the novel, they're totally ironized. Like in the essay, I have a certain interpretation of Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, and in the book, it's the complete opposite. And so there's some like irony going on there. But I guess it's entirely possible that people think this is about me. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I was just also curious about maybe just the way you even perceive the genre now, like what, like how that's changed since your the release of The Novelist.
I think I killed it. I
You
think
killed
I
autofiction.
killed autofiction. There's no more since me. It's over.
I agree.
Dean Kissett called the novelist meta anti-autofiction, which I liked a lot.
Oh my
And
God.
I'm sticking to it. It's over. It's done.
Okay, good. Thank God someone did it.
It's over. Hopefully you guys aren't doing that. It's over. It's been over for a while. It's really been over since the novelist came out, but yeah.
Cool.
No, yeah. I did kind of like this is kind of related to like what you were talking about before with like
We also, my cat's crying. I'm so sorry. I have to let her in.
I hear you.
Bug.
Bug?
Yeah, that's her name.
I've got a dog named Bugsy.
Really?
Yeah,
Aw.
I call him Bug.
Yeah, she's really cute. We think
Call him
she's dip
Bugs, the S, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah. We
Big
think
cat.
she's depressed in New York, though.
The cat?
Yeah.
Why would it matter?
She just doesn't
Well, she
like the
used to live in a
apartment. There's
house
an
with like
elevator.
stairs and like
She
a big
misses
house
stairs. She misses
and
going to the
trees.
backyard. Yeah. You want to
There.
see her?
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cal said she looks like an owl.
I can see that.
Yeah. Okay, anyways,
Yeah.
sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. were you asking a question?
Yeah, I think, oh, I was gonna ask just about like interpretation in general of like interpreting like or like of the novelist like being published and it being recognized as like an autofiction book and then like with this book like I get because I know in Muscle Man there's like a passage about interpretation with like Harold and like the way that his work has been interpreted and how it like frustrates him and to me that just felt like important in terms of like the moment that we're in right now, just like with communication and like the internet and like all that stuff and the way that people mass interpret things, and also how there's just like a million, like every interpretation that you could ever possibly think of is like online, and you can like find it online with like things to back it up.
You're gonna give me a panic attack. That's
No,
like
but
a
it's like a
frightening.
good
It's like a
it,
frightening. You think it's a good thing, you said?
maybe because then it's like
Well, I feel like every thought has just been desensitized. So it's like, yeah, there might be every thought, but then like there's a desensitization to like anything anyone could say at the same time.
It's a kind of a schizo like kind of situation. You know what I mean? Like, Every interpretation is available online. You know, you can.
It kind of is though.
No, it's true. I mean, it's true. I mean, I think that's why I think things like discernment and judgment are like incredibly important. You
Good
know.
luck figuring out what you think. True.
Well, I'm thinking about this with the Sabrina Carpenter album cover.
So I
See.
Listened to so I listened to a good chunk of that album for the first time yesterday.
Ooh,
it's not, I don't think it's a good album.
No, it's not. No, she like it's like she's wearing the skin of like a pop star from the past or something, where it's like there's no sense of like subtlety or romance or any. It's just it's like literally it's like listening to porn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but it's completely sterile. Like, I don't know. It's the weirdest.
I did like the one song. Yeah, Nobody's Son. I like.
That, like, it has me thinking about interpretation.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
why people like people Sabrina Carpenter exist, is so that they lead you into thinking about interpretation, and then you become schizophrenic.
She, yeah, she.
It's... No go.
Your wife like her?
No, I don't think so. I mean, a couple of the songs on the first album were good. I like girl pop. I'm like, I never talk about this, but I'm a huge fan of like.
Wait, okay. What's your favorite?
Yeah. What's your
Man, what is my favorite?
Do you like album? Ariana?
Never got an Ariana. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I know that's your zone. I mean, I'm trying to even. I'll probably have to like look at my phone. I really liked.
Did you have a Brat Summer? Is that what it
run
is?
Away with me, run away with. Wait, hold on. Who is the? No, I did not have a Brat Summer.
Oh, okay.
Damn, spacing out. I'm exposing myself as a fake girl pop fan. Hold
I
on.
Feel like that adds a lot of dimension to you, though. I really like that.
What who did
you should talk about this more.
Yeah, talk
who did
about
the, who did, oh Carly Rae Jepsen's album Emotion.
Oh
yeah, great
album. Full-blown banger.
Skips.
That's none. That's
Do you like her old stuff?
Like what? I mean it's been a while. So I like what?
Like well whatever album I really like. Is that the name
I think
the
that's album? is that on Emotion?
No,
it's
so.
Not.
Hold on,
I
else?
Really like you.
Yeah, because I have a vivid memory of that one because of Justin Bieber and Ariana Grande being on tour together, and they like did like a backstage like, oh, we're having so much fun backstage video where they all dance to that song. So yeah,
it's a great album. I mean, I the only Taylor Swift album I really liked was Red, which I was
Red
like,
is so good.
Red is
one of
Red
her best.
Is totally amazing.
I feel like you'd like 1989, just judging by you liking Carly Rae Jepsen.
I did a little bit. Look, my most recent search was Katy Perry.
Oh my god.
So that proves it.
We were listening to which I didn't particularly we were listening to Last Friday Night or whatever. A kind of a banger. And then
which of these songs do you feel like goes, which song would you say is the novelist, and which ooh. Song would you say is Muscle Man? Out of your girl pop listenings.
Damn.
That's a good question.
Thanks. I just thought of it.
I know. I could tell.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I like okay Lau, you guys say that or whatever. It's how they pronounce it. The novel, damn, I'm gonna have to think about that.
It's
legitimately too hard.
We can add that in like edit or something.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to figure out a way to splice in. I'm like looking at my phone trying to remember it. I can't remember.
Just send an email later. We'll add it in. We'll put we'll put text on the screen
with music with like a sound effect.
Oh, we can put the song in for a second. Okay, so this song is The Novelist,
but just
oh, that'd be good.
And then this song is Muscle Man.
That sounds good. I'll try anyway. Yeah, I liked when I was recently at the gym, I was like, I had a period for like probably a week and a half where I was listening to Pink Pony Club.
Oh my god
probably like a year whenever it came out I was listening.
It was so good when it came out.
So
like
good.
yeah
it was like her stuff was crazy, even though everyone online kind of hates her.
I mean, I could see why. I didn't know what she looked like or what she acted like or anything.
People hate her because of the way she looks.
I mean, look, if you're, you know, I'm not above that having an effect on my appreciation.
You don't like drag queens? Damn. You heard it
I'm
here.
not going to
Gordy
answer the
Castro
question
does
in
not
that
like
way.
drag queens.
But I'm not going to answer the question phrased that way, you know.
Okay.
I think,
Okay. Did it?
Okay, yeah, so I guess we're done talking about that now.
Yeah. Well, did you have anything else to ask?
Well, okay, do you think it's because she's like a little bit thick? Like you don't like thick
Oh,
girls?
no, I'm not gonna,
Or anything?
no, I shouldn't have even, I just meant like, I saw
I know, I'm
videos of
just
her
like
acting crazy.
making she's being, yeah,
just
annoying.
being annoying.
Okay. It's the red hair, isn't it?
She looked, it's not because she's a little bit thick. You know, first of all, I've got a wife. I'm not doing this whole thing, but she just looked annoying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand that.
Like you can
Yeah.
just tell, you can just kind of just tell.
Yeah. Well, everyone online does hate her for her
Well, because she was annoying in that one interview. I think that's why everyone hates her,
like
no?
talking about political beliefs or something like that. She was like,
Yeah.
everyone should like also be friends with you if you have different political beliefs than me, and everyone got mad at her.
Oh, she said that. That's kind of a good thing to say. That I mean,
Yeah.
she's the album. I shouldn't even be talking shit. The album has a bunch of bangers on
Yeah,
it.
true.
I meant for this to be a chaperone appreciation.
Well, maybe okay, give her like one, like a put up or something.
Give her a put. I mean, the songs are
The
great.
song, yeah,
Well, give
they're
her another
bangers
one about her appearance.
I'm not gonna
About
give her a
her
no, no.
looks. Okay. So
Yeah.
with
Moving
the
on from that.
novelist, so much praise focused on how it captured the internet. Okay.
I hate when you talk like this.
But yeah, so Wired wrote an article with the headline, "Finally a novel that gets the internet right." But
Oh, you've got the Marie Calloway book in the background there.
yeah, I do.
Yes.
I'm
Isn't that
so glad you
awful?
brought that up.
Is it always there?
I
No. actually just got it
You just
recently.
put it up for this interview?
No. I was gonna
Oh,
lie
okay.
and say that I did if you asked me
Yeah.
about it, but I'm being honest instead.
Yeah.
I just got it recently, like because I read her stuff on Moo Moo House like more recently than I should have because I didn't know about her.
Cool.
And I read the full book and it was really good.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyways, I spilled wax on my book and I scraped it off with a knife. So now there's like knife imprints on my book, but you can't tell because it's just like such a
No.
textured like image on the.
I really like that shelf
Thank you.
with like the rose and the Marie Calloway book and the candle.
Yeah, it's
Her
nice.
book kind of gets the internet right, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Messaging in it, like just like the text, like screenshots and stuff. I was just like, okay, yeah, this is like very like encapsulating a certain like person on the internet and also just like a certain time that like I feel like you can't capture without just like literally like straight like IM screenshots.
Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure, for sure.
But anyways, okay, the novelist headline, finally a novel, it gets the internet right. So what do you think it means to get the internet right? Because I feel like
Oh, sure. I actually might have an answer for that. I was going to
okay,
make
yeah, go
a joke
ahead.
about what it means is just to buy my
Yeah.
novel, and you know,
Yeah.
that's they can buy the novel and find out what it means. I mean, the one of the things that basically not being cliche, like one of the things I think people when they think about their experience, it's hard to write about using the internet. It's hard to write about it honestly and also interestingly. And one of the things that I noticed when I was writing about it was that there's this temptation to like, you know, I got sucked into scrolling. Oh, I you can talk about it in all these ways that actually obscure what's going on. And I think like when I tried to kind of like actually observe like the physical mechanics, like, you know, swiping on the keyboard and like what my hand actually looked like when I was doing that, or you know, what actually happened when you know, I was trying to do one thing and then, you know, it's 3 minutes later and I'm like in the middle of some sort of you know, I'm like looking at who liked a certain tweet. I mean, I know you can't do that anymore, but that was like, and just trying to actually concretely map out the mechanics of that was sort of interesting and full of all of this kind of interesting literary tension that I kind of didn't anticipate. But I think that's partly what it is just to kind of like be concrete and specific as opposed to cliche or like obfuscatory or sensational. I don't know, just yeah.
No, that reminds me a lot of like, we talk about this a lot in terms of like when I was younger and I felt, and there weren't really any like internet movies, I feel like I would watch a movie that tried to deal with the internet and it would like completely like deter me from that movie and make me feel like the entire movie itself was corny. And I think there is like definitely like a very like specific way that you have to go about dealing with it that like also like it's weird because so people are on so many different sides of the internet. And so I feel like something that's corny to like me wouldn't be corny to like someone who like doesn't use the internet that deeply, like, which is an interesting like piece of it because it's like what actually like is corny and like sometimes you can do it in a hyper aware way. Sorry, excuse me.
Bless you. Bless you.
Bless you.
Not a, yeah.
Bless you.
Oh, I was not saying, oh, okay.
Thanks,
We said that kind of
guys.
in unison, kind of as like,
Yeah.
Could you
Bless
not hear
you.
me?
No, I can hear it
Sorry, I'm
now.
like fighting an illness right now. I don't know if anyone could tell. So yeah.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Fighting an illness right now. What was I gonna say? It's like interesting like evaluating like what that means to like now in like our like current internet like time. And I think that like the novelist did a really good job of dealing with like the side that is like just like the hyper aware like Twitter space kind of like something that I feel like I understand and like a lot I guess anyone who's like kind of a part of like the online like lit community kind of understands.
Honor did a great job too with the first story in Honor Levy's collection. I mean, a bunch of them are really great, but the first
Yeah.
one in particular, I feel like really does an amazing job of kind of like rendering
Yeah.
the internet. But there's some of
Yeah.
the ones I've tried to look at. It feels almost like it's like some sort of like Gen X, like we're like old person being yeah.
Yeah, well, I feel like the early version of that was like Dork Diary and like adults trying to do like kid like IMs to appeal to children, you know?
Yeah.
No,
You don't
You don't
know
know
Dork
Dork
Diary?
Diaries? Yeah.
I was gonna say also, but like I was coughing too hard, so I just gave up. But I feel like the novelist reminded me a lot of like a Sisun post that I saw where it was like just about being careful about who we turn into like online idols and who we're worshiping through like constant check-ins and like looking for signs on their profiles and like what we take it to mean about ourselves. I was curious if like you had anyone like that who you kind of did that about or like if that was kind of your motivation for writing it was like having just like parasocial relationships but with like people you know in real life.
Well, I'll say Sisun tweeted something like about how she had been thinking the phrase muscle man over and over and over and singing it in the sing-songy type way and then deleted it. And then she tweeted another thing about thinking about muscle man and then deleted it right away. So I, for the record, for the record. Anyway,
Wait, was this before
wait,
you
but
had thought of the
yeah.
name Muscleman?
No,
Was it
it was in, specifically in reference to my, I think it was a quote tweet of one of my, it was like specifically in reference to my book.
okay, that's funny.
So
Oh, okay.
she's tweeted and deleted about it a bunch
That's really funny.
of times. She's great.
She's
Her
thinking about it. She thinks
tweets are
yeah.
great. She's her tweet, her, yeah, she's a really great poster. In terms of Parasite, like I don't, it's weird. Like, so I don't know. I don't know why this is the case. I don't know that I've had parasocial relationships with people online. You know, I met Tao when I was in high school, but we like started emailing right away and then became friends like in person, like I don't know, a year later or something like that. I feel like I've met like almost all of the people that I looked up to online. I've never really had that. I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
that kind of
Well,
makes sense, like
I mean,
with
it's
how old
possible.
you are.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that actually for a while, like when I was in high school, it was weird. Like I imitated Tao's mannerisms and things like that. Like it was,
Yeah.
I think a lot of people did, but it was like, it was kind of strange. Or it, not strange, but yeah, strange. I don't
Yeah. No,
know.
I was gonna say, I feel like when if you like enter into something like that young and you like meet a lot of the people that young, it's like hard or you don't really develop that, I feel like, 'cause you're just like, oh, everything's this, like everything's real in this way.
Yeah, exactly. And it became real like really fast for me. Like I it's entirely possible that if it hadn't, I would have just had these parasocial relationships and whatever. But like it's just almost instantly became real. So I've never, but all that being said, there was a long period where, even though I knew a lot of those people in person too and had met them, like my internet life felt very, very different from my like actual life, you know?
Brittany, when you first were asking that question and you were like saying like the novels reminded me of Cy Swoon, I like thought that that was just like that was the whole statement. The novels reminded you of Cy Swoon.
Yeah, it
And I was
does.
gonna say
That's
that's
probably what
really
she
good.
does.
Yeah,
She can have
like
really good.
everything.
She goes on tears sometimes that are really inspired, I feel like.
Yeah,
So,
that like is interesting with her writing because I feel like
but you guys
specifically
have
her
had her on.
like,
I saw that. I saw you guys.
like I feel like you can feel the energy within like what she writes, like, and that you can tell it was just this like deeply inspired like post. Like the entire like experience that you're writing about in the novelist, like I'm curious what to you feels like a way to actually deal with the internet in a healthy way, and like how you find like grounding through the sanity of like the endless scrolling, and like also just in general, like what you think like an actual like healthy internet space looks like, or do you strike a balance between like the addictiveness that you're writing about and like using it for good?
I don't know. I haven't figured it out. I haven't figured it out. I mean, there have been times where, I mean, right now, for example, I don't feel like I have a super crazy neurotic relationship with it, but I'm also not posting that much and I'm not really trying to kind of like, there was a period where I was like, tweeting a lot and paying a lot of attention. I mean, like, honestly, like I have a job, like a full-time job now, and that's been like pretty helpful, in terms of not just like clicking around constantly. But it's always one, it's one of these things where I'm never totally, it's hard to just, I think I was able to write about using the internet in a way that felt sort of like phenomenologically or experientially true. Like there is like a sort of truth in the sort of sensation of the prose, sort of truth in the concrete specificity. But talking about it is always really hard. It's like when people talk about AI, I always feel like they start to immediately sound like AI. And when you talk about like the internet or like healthy, it's I think it's still so just a part of like the way that we are that it's hard to say anything true about it. It's hard to kind of step outside of the experience and like actually say, there are people who will say, like they'll come up with rules for using it. I mean, I know Tao has had a lot of success with like some sort of app that he
Yeah,
uses.
his app.
And I keep telling him that I'm going to try it, but I like haven't tried it for some reason. And it's like, and a lot of good has come from it too. Like I met this guy Luke Burgess, who started this institute here and hired me to help run it. Like I met him on Twitter and like I met a lot of people. Like there's a lot of good has come from it. So I don't really know.
I've just been thinking a lot about whether or not now at this point, I feel like for a while, like the internet was just like, okay, this is like a projection of our physical selves, but now I like wonder often if it's more that like the online self is creating the physical self, especially for like young people and like in terms of how like young people are perceiving each other and even like almost like commodifying one another because of
Well,
like this like thing that just exists, and it's almost like a level, like it almost says like it's like that there's like a level next to your name online. You know what I mean?
mean, one of the things that I think is interesting about social media in particular is that people often make this critique. They're like, it's messing up your dopamine. It's, it's addictive. It's, but one of the things actually that Luke writes about is that I think people often don't write about the social aspect of it, of social media. They'll, where what you're really doing, he has this great image of you're taking the whole of humanity and basically putting it on the head of a pin. And it creates this situation where like people are sort of, Riff Raff has a great example of this, actually. He has a great quip about this where he says that, in the past, people used to email him or message him and say, your music is so good, it like inspires me to go to my job at the post office or whatever. And now everybody messages him and says, your music is so good, it inspires me to be just like you, like another, like a rapper. And so there's like a flattening that happens Where I think you're right, like the it's not just like, oh, here's this tool, and it's kind of this value neutral tool, and we're able to kind of use it or whatever. I think it actually creates who we are. Like I was formed, yeah. And you guys are younger than me, but like I was formed in the image of the internet. Like I was like, I got the way I talked from the internet. You know, I got the way you know, the books I read were, you know, I got recommended from the internet. Like the people that I became friends with were from the internet. You know, and the things I thought were like funny, it was because of the internet. The way that I, you know, like all of this is and it wasn't like I wasn't like I was like a kid, you know what I mean? Even things like, I mean, people are, I mean, you know, the dating discourse is so stupid and tortured. people are literally like choosing life partners or partners in general because of things they've like seen and heard on the internet. They're you know, they're even the way,
like you can like someone for how they post, which is like crazy.
You can like someone for how they post for sure, you know, but
or the way they tweet.
The way they tweet, you know, you
the
can
podcast they have.
I mean, I think people's behavior is sort of informed by different things on the internet. I mean, it's all yeah, I think people really aren't honest about the degree to which, you know, what they see online affects their behavior and thoughts and desires, especially.
Yeah.
It's also weird with just like meeting people now, I think, because like, especially in New York, I feel like I've been noticing like, okay, I meet someone in real life and then afterwards I follow them. And then I'm just like, oh, I'm getting like a piece of your brain in a way that I never would have. And like, it never felt like that in the same way, I feel like, when we lived in Philly, because people just aren't as online there. But like here it's like, okay, I'm seeing like your tweets every single day and I'm getting like daily updates from you. And that's like, I feel like a new thing I've been grappling with of like, oh, like now I'm like, I don't know, it's just like different than like meeting someone online. It's like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. Now I'm like checking in on you and like I'm not even doing it purposefully, but it's like forming my idea of who you are instead of like me seeing you again.
Yeah
Especially when it's like because I feel like, yeah, having that in New York with like meeting new people and then it's like a friend that you like kind of know, but you're not that close. So it's not like they would like text you like things that are going on in their life, you know, but then you see it on Twitter and it's like, yeah, it's just funny.
I remember I went and watched like my friend Walt, I went and hung out with my friend Walt for a couple of days and we were like, spent one day like completely together for every second of the day. And he would always rib on me back when I was like tweeting all these long posts. He always thought it was kind of like uncouth and kind of like unseemly, just kind of a dumb thing to be doing. But I remember like I like wrote like a huge tweet like while sitting next to him, and he was just like, what the hell, like this is psychopathic behavior, you know, like we're hanging out and you're like just posting, you're having this whole other kind of like
this is what I deal with every day with Brittany.
I don't know who's on either side in your guys' friendship, but Walt was totally right. I was acting like a psychopath. Like that it was in retrospect, it's a crazy thing to do.
Well, okay, my friend like Samira, but our other friend Marielle was recently getting mad at me because like someone will say something funny and I'm like, oh my god, I gotta tweet that. And this was happening to me for like the earlier two weeks of being in New York. Like they were getting to me. So I don't do it as much anymore.
You did it in Philly too. Posting on like a story.
Some people are born to be, you know, some people are posters and that's just
some people are born to be posters.
There have been periods where I think it's been a great thing, and some people are posters, you know.
That's so true. But it is kind of true, like, because she'll get really mad of like if I say a, like she told me that she sometimes doesn't say a joke because she doesn't want me to tweet it, which is like kind of crazy.
You're kind of just, you're sort of like at that point just kind of, the one thing that is weird when I've been in the zone where I'm posting constantly is like it really does change, you start scanning the world for tweets, and like I think you know, in a weird way it's like, okay, someone, you know, my friend says a joke, and then I'm like immediately triangulating that joke with this like mass of others, and then I'm like sucking it into my head and then spewing it out like as a performance for these, like it's a creepy thing that, I mean, sorry, but like when you think about what it is, it's like it's a weird thing to do. I get it, but you know, You become like a content monger. I don't know.
Yeah, well, even like just like rephrasing stuff. Like I feel like I was having that recently too, and like a serious scenario where my friend was telling me about something traumatic that happened to her, and like in my head, I like noticed that in my head I started like editing it. It, like, and being like, oh, like she should write this, like it, and like this is the
Yeah,
part
you
she should
do that
include.
to me
And
sometimes.
I was like, oh my God, like what is wrong with me? Like the fact that this is actually happening, and like I'm noticing, like it's a good thing to notice, obviously, but it's like crazy that that's how like sucked in and like interconnected it is.
My Nicolette used to be able to tell when I was thinking of a tweet just based
So
on
funny.
literally just based on like my eyes. Like she'd be like, are you thinking of a tweet?
That's awesome.
And I totally would be. Like she would
Then she's
catch
like, stop
me.
fucking thinking about the tweet.
Right.
Like, pay attention to me.
It's
Funny.
it's a weird thing. I haven't been able to I haven't been interested in posting in a long time. As much as the
Yeah. Also kind of just led into the next thing that I wanted to ask about just like posting in general, and also just like the current writing economy right now, and like how young writers are navigating that of because like that like thing of like, oh, like I'm editing this in my head to like figure out like how to tweet it or how to post it or whatever. And like with like Substack and like publishing and everything like that. I'm curious, like this is kind of a broad question, but just like your thoughts on it now as someone who like has like edited and has been in the writing industry for a while. And like how it's possible to like, I don't know, like because sometimes it feels like being a writer and like right now with like everything, like even like with like the like posting and Twitter and everything, like it's like the most like it's like impossible to maintain any sort of peace, you know?
Well, I think yeah, for sure. And I think it can be incredibly damaging to always be navigating a sort of social or semi-social space online. I won't even talk about like when I'm working on novels, like with the novelist or like I won't even talk about them when I'm working on them. Even a little. Like maybe one maybe I'll also go, but I won't even because there's something I think incredibly important about like keeping things in until you can kind of work them out in the sort of proper channels, because otherwise it becomes way too concerned with other people's responses, which I think can be totally damaging. And one of the things that's super corrosive about kind of writers always navigating the social space online is that they start to kind of play to this audience in a way that's sort of, or they play to engagement, or they play to whatever this kind of thin social space that I just think it's really detrimental for art. It's also detrimental for like growth. Like there's something about like reading by yourself or writing by yourself and not for, I mean, I've written novel manuscripts that I haven't put out. Most essays that I write, drafts don't come out. And I always operate under the assumption that whatever I'm working on isn't going to come out. Because I want to be able to explore in my work. I want to be able to kind of like operate from a place of kind of creative exploration and not this kind of like manipulative I'm going to control how everybody thinks of me and da, 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 that kind of a zone. So I think it can be really bad. I would suggest that people just like stop paying attention to what I didn't read the reviews of the novelist. I don't really pay attention to like what people say about me in general. You know what I mean? Like I think it's just really important to keep the two things separate. And you can play like
No, that reminds me of like this one time we were visiting our friend, and like the both of us were like sitting and like writing in our journals, and I remember I was just like writing like really fast, 'cause whenever I write in my journal I like write like I just like scribble down things. And I remember our friend, he was like surprised that I was like writing that fast and was like, you must have like so much to, like that's like insane that you have like that much to say. I didn't even think that there was like this internal thing of like, oh, like it's like your journal, like no one's gonna see it, but like it was like this thing of like, but I have to like write it in a way where it sounds like me or where it sounds like cool or put together. Do you know what I mean?
I do. I mean, I can't journal for that reason. Like, it's hard. Like, it's hard not to have the sort of voice of the imaginary other, the judgment of the imaginary other, sort of like in your head when you're doing stuff, even privately. And I think like, yeah, it's, I mean, in Muscle Man, for example, I have the, you know, the Harold kind of like imagining himself that he's on a podcast so that he's able to like think in a sort of articulate, he's always kind of navigating this space of like the other that's like even often just in his head, you know? And I do think that that's like a, like it's a sort of unique, like condition of our time as a result of the internet, is that like, we're always kind of aware of other people, and in a way that's just totally strange. I mean, I mean, the other thing I'll say about writing in particular is that I think that many people over-index. They're always thinking about success, or you know, getting a deal, or get, you know, whatever. You know, they think way too much about that kind of stuff, and way too little about actually writing something good. And it's super easy. The easiest thing in the world is to like get attention, or get, it's like, it's not that hard. The hard thing is to actually write a good book, and more people who want to be writers should focus on that. And I can end with a book recommendation, which is just that I've been reading a bunch of Patricia Highsmith lately, and she's been really the, Deep Water is a total masterpiece.
Okay.
The Talented Mr. Ripley, which was a major motion picture, the novel.
Yeah.
And, anyway, Deep Water is the one I read most recently. It's it hits great for your listeners.
Cool. They're checking it out.
Yeah, they're saying thank you.
No problem. No problem.
Yeah.
We also have one last thing. We have all our guests like say a thing.
We have everyone say a thing to try to get this guy on. I don't know if you watched the Tao episode, he did it. He was very like, he was like, oh, I don't know, it might make me resent you. But then he said it in the end. So
I like how you bolded repeat this in your Brittany.
Hold on, I'm gonna.
As if people don't know.
No. Okay, because I copy pasted my whole note, and the title of the note is "Repeat this," and I just have it pinned. And normally, I don't type that part. Okay. Anyways.
The director of Spree.
He was in.
He was in it. Oh, you know about Spree.
You guys can't get. Did you guys have like Eugene on or something like?
Yeah.
So Eugene can't get him on.
Dude, Eugene won't text it. Him.
Yeah.
Why are you? You guys had Peter on too, right? Oh, you guys. I'm not the one. I'm gonna have no pull with this guy. You guys.
It's fine.
Guys,
we have it's everyone. Okay. It's yeah. For a compilation video.
We're close-ish to our 100th episode. Yeah, we're gonna do a compilation.
And we're thinking about getting a billboard where we have everyone donate so that we get a billboard with his face on it that says.
Why you guys want this? Why do you want him so bad?
We both used to watch him. Like
he's like offline now. He like formed a lot of like people's like. Poor memories of the internet, of him like doing cool stuff on YouTube.
He's one of our parasocial icon figures.
He's low-key the first comic ever. True.
Yeah, you guys, how do you say his last name?
Josh Ovaye.
Ovaye. All right, Josh Ovaye. You guys should come on this podcast. You should come on this podcast. There's something about the repeat this in bold, which is just fully making me not want to do it. So
that's fine. Don't that's do it. Say what you want.
That's
say what you
want.
Yeah,
you
know. That's fine.
Although to be honest, Eugene or Peter should just get him for you. I don't know.
They won't
you,
do okay, it.
What if you tell Eugene?
I don't know him that. I'm like, we're not. I mean, I don't know him that well. I did.
He'll probably listen if you tell him though.
Yeah, I feel like he would listen if a man told him.
Yeah.
There's something about the way you guys went about trying to get me to do this just makes me not wanna help. I gotta be honest. The repeat this in bold, it's like it's
yeah,
like,
pretty. I don't know why you would do that. That was a mistake. It's crucial mistake.
It's like some sort of like demented kind of command that I'm just not interested in.